And then let's get into it.
And okay, I'm up and recording. Greetings, everybody. This is Wesley Pepper. This is the Art Elixir podcast. This is episode 130. And yeah, greetings to everybody. Remember, guys, I'm working with Mustafa Junado on Junado Talks Football. So please look out for that podcast. Also like and subscribe, especially to this channel, especially if you're new. I'd appreciate that. Mustafa's channel is on YouTube as well, so Junado Talks Football, so look out for that. Also, there's African Genius, the collaboration I did with Uncle Asar. That channel is also available on the Art Nexia channel, so look forward to that too. It's nice and warm here in the studio today. I think it's probably touching 40 degrees in the studio. So if anybody that has air conditioners and stuff, yo, we are like... yeah, we're dying. We're dying. Yeah,
it's been so hot. It's been so hot the past few days.
Yeah, and yeah, man, let me introduce my guest. Like, I'm doing with a very sweet, lovely Lerato Waga Matumela, all the way from you in Pretoria now, né? But you're based in Cape Town, or you're studying in Cape Town. But are you back in
Cape Town? Yes, I'm based in Cape Town, and Pretoria is my hometown.
Okay, so you're in Cape Town right now, né?
I'm in Pretoria. Cap City.
Yeah, PTA, man. You know, if you're new to this channel, Pretoria is a very lucky place, man. Yeah.
It's where you and I met, Wes, remember. If you remember.
Yeah, no, I do.
Karabo, the whole consciousness.
Yeah.
Oh, until we're popping back then.
Yeah. We can actually start up there. Those were very cool days, and I really set the I guess the pace and the direction of where I guess potentially ended up in. Because we were publishing, you know, online, you know, that's a form of digital publishing. That really got me stuck into the tech industry, where I'm trying to get my feet in now with the arts. But we'll get to me. Lerato, you are a very talented sister. Like, I follow your YouTube channel. I follow your poetry. So you're a writer, you're an academic, and a bit of an activist as well. So just give us a one-liner or a few lines on who is Lerato, and we'll just wing it from there.
Okay. Lerato is a multidisciplinary writer and thinker and overall creative. Because I don't have only one mode or form of art that I express myself through. I actually, from season to season, you know, one season I'm into, you know, writing songs. The next season I could be into writing poetry. So I don't like limiting myself. I allow the creativity to flow. But if someone was to put me in a corner and say, listen, you can't be, you know, a master of all trades, what are you? Then I would probably go for a multidisciplinary writer.
I know that you were hosting a podcast with, was it Exclusive Books?
Yes.
But like 2 years ago, a year ago, something like that?
It was 2 years ago, 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, do you still do that?
I don't know what happened with that. The podcast kind of fizzled out, and they didn't renew for a new another series last year, so I don't know what happened with it.
No.
It is what it is.
That one was also, it was a bit, you could see it wasn't your project. It looked very formulated. You could see you had a script, so to speak, that you had to speak of. That's okay, but I always feel that if people want that type of content, you know, there's the mainstream media for that. I don't think people don't access, well, most people don't access podcasts for formulated stuff. But anyway, I don't want to sound like I'm dissing.
But I might say, Wesley, that I did learn a lot from that whole experience. You know, we never want to burn our bridges. So I am grateful for Exclusive Books, you know, for affording me the opportunity. But I do agree with you that podcasting is still kind of like new terrain in South Africa. We're still trying to find our own sort of stylistic, you know, niche. And for us, I think what works is mostly independent. We have our own brand. We could, the whole, you know, British podcasting style doesn't really work for us, I think.
No. I And I try to focus just on the arts and on creative people in general. And I feel that there's also a bit of a niche market there. And there's so many people to talk on, and there's so many people, artists and voices, I want to give a proper platform to, so they can talk about things that matter. I feel that and that kind of ties into what it comes to book flows, because it comes to books kind of mainstream though. And
It is
it's
mainstream,
usually focused just on a very selective few. I feel we've got so many creative people across, and so many people doing so many cool stuff, man.
Thanks.
Man. So actually, let's just jump into that. So, we were chatting when it was just scheduling this episode about things that you wanted to sort of talk about the whole thing about the history in the Cape and sort of the I would say the let me just say the politics around identity, with regards to colored people, to the Khoi, and so forth and so forth. I thought that was pretty cool. I wanna give you a sort of set of the, I mean, there's a word for it in a way. Let me just start with it. So as you know, there's a sister that won a Grammy Award just the other day, a colored girl. Tyler won a
Yes,
Grammy for,
Tyler.
yeah,
Shout out
and
to Tyler.
she one of the I mean, I don't really I don't really listen to electronic dance music, but one of the reasons I one of the stuff I heard from what she was doing was that she was sort of advocating or talking a lot about colored identity to the US. There was one thing that buddies of mine in the States were a bit confused about, that she was called a colored girl. They thought, oh shit, must be offended about this, mustn't. So pretty much the point that we got there is that Americans don't own a monopoly on on racism. People were called different things in different parts of the world. So I guess gave them another perspective. But that's the one side. The other side to it, I mean, she's in her 20s, or I mean, she's still young. One of the problems I have with identity politics is that, and it's only black people that do this, and this includes, black African Americans, Afro Brazilians, and so forth. We always have comedians, musicians, and people like that being sort of leaders of our culture, or being big spokespersons. I mean, you can look at the like of Dave Chappelle, for example. I mean, he's a comedian; he makes people laugh. That's his job. For him to talk, I mean, like, you can talk about all these identity politics, which is right, which is correct. I salute that, but I don't always think it's a good idea to have somebody whose job is a singer or a comedian or an actor or a sports person. So yeah, what's your do you have an opinion on that?
I mean, I don't think she has gone out to say she wants to be the ambassador for, for race politics. And, it just so happens that she used her platform. And if I'm correct, she was being interviewed about, who she is, where she's from. I mean, now she's a rising star. She's up and coming. Not many know of her, and she so happens to come from, a country in a continent that's so kind of marginalized. And who would have thought an R&B singer from South Africa? Ooh, ha. Tell us about yourself. You are a black African, and then she just had to correct them and say, "Well, for me, I'm a colored." And so first and foremost, I actually salute her for using her platform, her agency as a performer, to bring her own take to global issues and narratives. And everyone has that capital and agency to introduce themselves to the world, say who you are. And we come from different parts of the world, and we each have unique perspectives, and we can all add to public discourse and global discourse. So she has always, this 22-year-old girl, she's always been calling herself a colored. Why now must she go to a frame of reference and try to find the most American appropriate term, especially when you are in the moment, you're just going to be who you are. And she was like, "No, man, I'm colored." I don't know if she knows of American politics in terms of the term colored and their relationship with that specific word. I think she was speaking out of just innocence, and just a very personal, objective stance. She wasn't trying to be a teacher, you know, she was just being herself. And in South Africa, of course, she is regarded as colored and she seems to be proudly colored. I just found it a bit hilarious how the Americans, as usual, they're quite dramatic about everything. And how they sort of blew that, you know, they really blew that up. And I mean, now it was a whole headline and whole stories were written on the fact that this girl says she's colored. But I found it just to be nice that it opened up the narrative, you know, for us to start talking, especially between, I would think, between Blacks in the diaspora, a Black South African, a Black African American. We are Black, but we're finding out that as much as we have, you know, common issues of being marginalized as Black bodies in the world, but we also have different perspectives and also politics of naming as well. You know, there's certain words that are for us, it is what it is. For them, it's like, oh, but you're hurting me. You are, you know, you are hurting me. You are victimizing me. For us, it's like, listen, for us, we have our own politics, you know. We also have got our own narrative to this. And I like what you said earlier, there's no master of narratives and words. And America is not, I mean, as much as they're very influential in terms of, you know, culture and stuff, but I mean, they're not the master of knowledge and identity. So yeah, thanks to all these artists that have, you know, found popularity beyond our country. They are starting to sort of put spotlight on the complexities that we have as South Africans.
And we have plenty. And we have been
We
plenty,
do. We
plenty,
have a
plenty.
lot, yeah.
And the whole identity politics.
Wait, do you call yourself a colored? I'm sorry for jumping. Do you call yourself a colored?
Good question. Right now, like I'm sitting here right now, no, I don't. I'll tell you why. It's a bit of a complex relationship with a word or the culture. As you know, I'm an artist. My core is visual art. In all the 100% of all the institutions I went to, so this is stretching from 96, 94, I don't know, like late 90s when I was in art school, until when I was at Artist Proof, I was always the only colored fella in the in the group. And I started getting art school when I was like really in my teens, so my identity already got that I'm a minority. I was always a minority, always. And if there's something about about being a minority is that like you're always disenfranchised with everything, so you always have to attach yourself, associate yourself with everybody else. And as a kid, as a teenager, and my early 20s, I was a bit naive. I associated myself with anything, and I soon found out. So back then, I still saw myself as colored, but everybody else called me, and I was. But I found that like calling myself that, disenfranchises me, and I don't think there's a lot of power in that. In the early 2000s, that's when my, especially with Death Prez, that album was so important to me. When the Let's Be Free album got launched, like a lot of things in my life sort of was leaning towards Pan-Africanism, and that sort of just like burst me through the into the door. And that started reading everybody else, lots of, and then also with the spoken word and stuff like that. Then I felt now I'll wear the cloak of being an African, like with a K. And not South African, just the word African. Then we know Karabo and
This is the
consciousness and
thing.
everything. I felt a sense of community and a sense of belonging, and I felt, I felt part of a group, and that was cool. Up until it wasn't so cool, because I also realized, like in the arts, the arts is like everybody eats off one plate, so you have like 100 people, and you only have like one pie that's got to feed. So there's this the way the capitalist system is set up, like everybody's got to fight over the small piece, and it's quite it's hectic. So what artists usually do is they get into various collectives, and those collectives or cliques are usually shaped around some form of culture or some form of identity. And I always got excluded from that. And that also led to me getting excluded from different gigs and so forth and so forth. And then because of my identity, there was a certain expectation of the type of art that I should do. And I don't agree with that. I feel I'm a different type of person. I'm not like that. This. Also around about that time, being the person I am and so forth, I tried to, hell man, I even tried to produce a play with, what's that guy, Dimitri Stefanis.
Are you serious?
We had a I had Philip rewrite Philip D.T. Kotler to rewrite a very dope ass play about Stefanis, which I wish I had. I was gonna produce it. I went to all these colored organizations and stuff, and it just all went flat, man. I didn't really like the politics. I didn't really like the way they spoke, to me or about me. And I don't want to really pick that because I don't really want to point fingers at anybody. I know I don't like to use this platform to, to point fingers and shit, right? But that didn't work. I didn't agree with the way these organizations were working. I didn't like the way they spoke to me, and I just didn't like it. I think there's a certain, anyway, I don't want to get too nuanced about it, but that didn't work out for me, basically. And I've also been working, through years with various and relating to a lot of other creative, colors in the creative community. And one thing I always found with being a disenfranchised a person is that you, whenever you are together, you always talk about being disenfranchised. And I think that I just can't anymore. I don't feel I am that as a human being. So that's why I just sort of give you
I can relate to that.
the long and everything so you understand. So for now, I just call myself a South African, African.
Okay, that's very generalized.
Yeah, it says
But
generic as it gets.
I feel, where's what you're talking about, right? I can relate in the sense that I feel like for most South Africans, I don't know, especially I would think in my generation as a millennial, we are so fatigued, right? Speaking about identity politics, we are fatigued. We are
Ooh,
fatigued and
I
already
agree.
are battling with so much because we were almost sold a dream. We're told that, right? You guys are being schooled and you are entering the job market at a time when South Africa is this beautiful rainbow nation. And lo and behold, the country is going through a lot of corruption. The country is captured and still uncapturing. So because of all those burdens, the hustle, and some of us, we have like background, issues, especially being like the first generations, first, second generation of blacks, of people who are, went to university. There's so much that we carry on our shoulders, right? So our parents and grandparents had to carry, the struggle, but we have a new kind of struggle. And I
I
like the fact
agree.
that you touched on, being from this, capitalist plate, and it's a lot. It takes a lot of toll on our psyche. And I mean, we are young, we're fresh, we must be happy. We can't live a life where there's so much gloom. But the reason why I sort of feel like we also don't have a choice to speak about these identity politics as much as they are so draining is because if we don't start sort of like trying to figure out what is wrong with us, who are we as South Africans? Where are we going? Especially you and I, who are cultural makers. For you and I now, we are talking. It's so natural to talk. It's so natural to express. We have so many, we are well acquainted with our history, well, in a healthy sense. Because like what we're saying a few minutes ago, there was a time in our lives about a decade ago where we're hanging out the whole consciousness crew, and it healed us. It gave us confidence. It gave us understanding of who we are, and it translates even to our creativity. Look at your podcast, what you're doing now.
Yeah,
But
man.
we take it for granted that not everyone is like us. We cultural makers, we entertainers, we artists. Yes, we need to take care of ourselves first. I do agree with you on that. We've got to find our own happy. We gotta push our own, you know, life. But it's also important that we also bring these very uncomfortable narratives to the fore. And that's why I think for me, there was a time, especially after consciousness, I disappeared. I was like you. As much as I'm very beautifully Pan-Africanist, I was like, I don't wanna be deep. Don't talk to me about any Pan-Africanist. I just wanna be, you know, I just wanna be whether I have an Afro, I don't have an Afro. Don't judge me. I just want to be. That was the most liberating time of my life. Why? Because I had to unburden, you know, as much as my ideals will always be very conscious, very Pan-African, but I just had to also remove the load of sometimes trying to be too radical when it comes to things. And I think that's why now I've gravitated back to, you know, yes, at the end of the day, I am very much Pan-Africanist, but I can come back and then start talking about these things again. You know, so I feel you for the fact that, you know, talking about colored politics and things and what is being a colored is, it can be really boring and daunting because you've dealt with it. You get what I mean? You've dealt with it. But, you know, I have seen being from Pretoria, having relocated to Cape Town, there's a lot amongst the colored communities, you know, and I've made a lot of friends, and it was eye opening even for me as a South African, because I really got to understand just from uncovering so much from their stories that, my goodness, we don't know our country. We don't know our country's background. And I also realized, I started asking myself, how come we don't know enough about this people group, which are, who are very different amongst them, but for some reason they've been put in one group, as color group. How come I, as a Black South African, don't know enough? It may seem selfish and vain, but I don't like that. I really don't like it. It took me going to Cape Town, going to the Ezekiel Museum to understand, my goodness, we also have a history of slavery. Being a very ignorant Black South African, I used to assume that all so-called colors, you know, have the same ancestry. And especially being in Cape Town, having so many friends from that people group, finding out that no, Lerato, for me, I'm from Khoi descent, which, by the way, believe it or not, I also have a link to the Khoi ancestry. I'm from Khoi descent. You know, someone will be like, no, my ancestry links to Bangladesh and Madagascar. Someone will be like, no, from Malay, but I have a great-grandfather who was Dutch from the Netherlands, you know?
Yeah, man.
And for me, it was eye-opening. And to be honest with you, I was a bit angry because I asked myself, what is it about our narrative South African that we've chosen to sort of silence the narrative of the colored people group? We don't want to publish or talk about it. And on top of that, unfortunately, and I don't know who's to blame for this, unfortunately, there are so many stereotypes, ignorant stereotypes, derogatory stereotypes about colored people, as if colored people is one monolith of a people, you know? As if, you know, there are purpose or something. And for me, of late, I've been thinking that, you know, it may seem trivial, like, forget about it. We've got bigger issues. We've got looting in government. But when I do consider, especially when it comes to the Khoi clans, that these are the native people of South Africa, like it or not. You like it, you don't like it. It is facts. It is facts. They are native. The Khois are the native. We even have, as part of the coat of arms, we have, I don't know if it's the Nama or the Griqua, you know.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, you will not even acknowledge them within South African history books or within the narrative of our heritage. You don't even include one of the languages as part of the official languages, which disenfranchises the group from getting, you know, from getting privileges, you know. So for me, it may seem like a topic or narrative that is very trivial, but when you see that a country is going through a lot, sometimes you've got to be like, we've got to stop and say, who are we as a country? Why do we have problems with xenophobia? Who are we, you know? And I'm also very passionate about our history, you know, that we have to really start putting spotlight on. We need the whole history. We need the whole truth.
I agree with you.
To know ourselves is to be able to heal ourselves, and is to be able also to progress. Our psyche progresses, and that also filters out in how we live together and build together.
I agree with you there. Like, we need to know each other's history, for sure. For sure. And there is a, I mean, there's a power, one certain group was in power, they usually exercise their thoughts and ideas and so forth. And I do feel that, like, we have an election coming up in a few months, and especially in the Western Cape, because I know there's a lot of value in a coloured vote. So now they're going to sort of like use this cosmetic pop politics to sort of like speak to the
Yeah.
people, that actually, activate some form of a form of, like, I don't know, activism. I don't, it's not even activism, which is
Yeah.
which doesn't work. We don't look at each other's history, and we don't see each other as equals, and that's just a fact in this in South Africa. And anybody who's listening to this podcast, who's worked in any sector, especially the arts, will know that for sure. You can claim that you are not this or not that. When it comes down, when they're choosing somebody to do, his gigs and so forth, your race and your gender is a big factor. That it matters. It
It
matters.
just affect,
It
yeah.
matters. So you can think what you want, whatever, it matters. And you are correct. Like, we don't speak enough about it. I've actually been very reluctant. I mean, this is my 130th episode.
I can feel
Like,
I
I'll tell you, man. I
you.
really,
No, but
that's
respect,
a personal.
Wes. You gotta stand for what you stand. You gotta stand for what you. And if you feel like, listen, I'm over it. We are over it. Like, thank you for
You were saying earlier,
to fight for us, but we're
you
over
and I
it.
say, me, I'm free. I'm okay with that. I thought I could do that. I thought I
Sure.
could. But my brain is so programmed. Like, when I'm making any form of art, when I'm putting together those building blocks, those things just come to the front. Subconsciously, I don't even prompt it. Like, even if I'm just drawing, I have these birds and all these things that I draw, and I make.
Yes. Oh, I
They
love
all to do with.
these still draw doves. These still draw doves
I do, I
like
do, I do, I
Metropolis.
do. I have to. It's kind of like my thing, people
Yeah,
recognize
I
that and I make
know.
money off of it. It's kind of fucked up that I've got to like reduce everything that I do to a bird, But anyway.
Nah, bruh.
The
No,
arts are such a complicated thing that once you
that's
find the
your.
formula, you've got to stick to that. And we
You
can
don't
actually
have
talk
to.
about that. We can actually talk about that, because I do think that there's, I understand the value of it, of course, But as an artist, you're a creative person. You can't expect a creative person to do the same thing for like 20 years.
No.
I mean, you're gonna mess the person up, and once with a creative brain, I don't think it is so rooted to work a certain function that it's almost impossible to make it work in another way. And I think the powers that be are very well aware of that, which is why
Yeah.
after COVID, hey, Lerato, like, seriously, man, was it some white dude said, the height of insanity is doing something over and over and expecting a different result. I feel that the way the way the art's working, I can't work in that system anymore. I haven't even been making any art. These are just doodles on the wall here. I haven't
Are
been
you still
making.
working? Are you still working in? Are you still indie? Have you? I'm an indie now.
I am signed to a gallery, but they don't do shit for me, and I haven't heard from them in a while, and I'm not even reaching out.
Almost. You know, being a Pan-Africanist,
I'm
Wesley, we
not
must be very
really.
careful because it's not easy for us to submit in industry. It is so hard because we have too much to say. I don't know how much I've had to bite my tongue. And I'm like, and there comes a point actually you start feeling like you're going mad because you know that you know that you're supposed to speak. It's like a burden. It's like a little, on your shoulder. But because now, we are grown now, so obviously the pressure of I have to pay my rent, I
Yeah, I've
gotta,
got to make.
it's what causes us to gravitate back, to the 9 to 5. But be if you are a born and bred artist, it is hard.
Stuff. It's tough.
It's tough. But to a great extent, you have to sort of like shed or lay down a great part of yourself and conform
And that is, and
that model.
you can't just take that part and you know, put it in the ground and expect it to behave. You
Yeah.
can't, and you can't expect people to do that. Also, that also adds to another thing is like artists who do that needs to do something to themselves to keep their things expressed. And that's when either food, sex, drugs, all of the above, and all these other crazy things that you put even on top of that comes into play because you need to do something
Yeah.
to keep that thing suppressed, and that messes you up over the long, over the long. I'm doing this now for over 20 years, and
Yeah.
I've reached to a point where I can't. I've realized that this is how I am. This is da 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 da. But you know, I had to pivot, and I actually do want to sort of talk a little bit about that. But before we get there, this session is actually running out of time here. So let me just restart the
Okay.
session. I'll send you another link,
Okay.
and we can sort of wrap up after that. You cool?
All right, cool.
Okay, so I'm
Yeah.
gonna close this. I'm gonna send you the link in the next 30 seconds.
All right, cool, bro.
Watch out. But I'll just announce something real quick. Hi, everybody, and we are back. Just before we had a break there, the thing about artists having to sort of suppress anyway, their core identity to make a living. I think that system is evil. I think it's destroying families, to be honest. It's destroying families, and I think it's actually causing problems in the world. And I find that thing about we could have that conversation like 10 years ago. Let me just make this point, then I'll bring you in, right? We could have had this, we could have 10, 15 years ago, there's nothing you could do about it. But we have this technological boom. We have all these tech tools that are available that is making the one narrative is it's gonna take over the world. But I'm in my 40s now, I've been hearing everything has been taking over the world literally my whole life. That's all I've actually been hearing my whole life. Somebody or something's gonna take over the world. And the only thing that took over the world is capitalism. And I think that these tools, I'm talking about AI tools, 5G, 6G, and so forth, is allowing artists a bit more freedom, a bit more breathing room to work. Sort of, you don't have to work through an art gallery, through a record company, through a publisher anymore. You can work completely, as you said, indie, independent, and you can make a living off of it. So I think that's sort of where I'm pivoting to be, to be fair. But yeah, I just wanted to make that point. You wanted to say something?
I totally agree that the capitalist system is the root of all evils, corruption, the decay of the human soul. And I'm sorry for being too poetic and being, but it's facts. And you don't know until you actually enter. Until you enter the workspace, that's when I remember when I entered journalism. According to me, I was the solution to the world. I had come to save the world with my pen and my red chucks, and I'm gonna unravel, uncover, and I'm gonna break stories. And then you actually find out that at the end of the day, even with an industry, the media news industry that is supposed to purport, the most highest of human missions and visions, to be, such as being watchdogs of a society, uncovering truth and enlightening the masses. But you find out that at the end of the day, that is having is pie in the sky, is having your hair in the clouds. Yes, those elements are there, but at the end of the day, it's about making sure this paper stays afloat, beats its competitors, and makes profit. And doesn't matter who's the most talented of the lot, it's a dog is savage. Today, even if you're the talented of the lot, if you become too much of a problem, or if you don't comply to some things, and sometimes it can be something as simple as you didn't agree to go with your boss for a date to the Chisanyama that Saturday. I promise you, before long, conveniently, you'll be retrenched. You know what I mean? The workspace is savage. Yes, talent does count. I won't lie. I will never say look down on your talent. But talent, hard work doesn't necessarily mean or equal success or longevity in the workspace.
No, it doesn't.
It's a space where money, where it's about chasing money and some and buying favors. I think for South Africa, especially because our government is so unstable, it reflects also in workspace dynamics. People trying to, stabbing someone in the back. Being a young woman in the workspace is something else.
Yeah.
Is something else. We get hit
Do
on. We
you
get,
wanna talk a little bit about that? About hold on, sorry. Are you still there? Hello. Hey, we have a delay in broadcast there. People just bear with us. Was a bit of a delay. There. So I was gonna ask you, we were talking about the woman in the workplace. I was gonna ask you, wanna a little bit expand a little bit on that? Or just cool, is it something that's a bit too sensitive?
How can I even, sometimes you ask yourself, is it, but I think for some other sister, maybe I should say something. For a little young, little slave queen there who's graduated last year and just got employed. Okay, now in fact that I mentioned slave queen, I have a problem with slave queen culture.
Yeah,
Y'all can beat me,
yeah.
y'all can hate me. Okay, I always try to look at the positive side of things. The positive side is I love when women, as women, we find our power in the world. I love when women take care of themselves. I like when women don't, create own opportunities, right? So there are some ladies that when you look at them, you can assume they're a slave queen just because of how they groom themselves, but not necessarily so. But when I speak about the slave queen culture, I am specifically talking about the trend in South Africa where younger ladies, who work from the morning, they rise and they go to gym. They gotta get the stomach right. They gotta get the booty nice and plump like a plum. And they're all chasing to get themselves a nice blesser who will take them to the Dubais and to other places and give them a nice healthy bag. And their job is to find a photographer who take pictures on the yacht or wherever they are, and their on-hand makeup artist and post pictures on the gram. And the gram makes the money, the blesser gives the money, and it's a whole slave queen machine. So I'm talking about that. I'm not talking about ladies with weave. Slave queen is not, it's not about a lady with a weave, so
Yeah.
let's not really look down on ladies because of the choice
Yeah.
of aesthetic or dress,
Yeah.
but it's more just that culture and to say that, I finance my life, by using my body as capital. My body and my time, because obviously I have to be your trophy wherever you go. I'm on hand at your beck and call whenever you need me to come and meet you, Mr. Politician, to come meet you at the hotel, because now there's a sauna address in Cape Town, and you need somebody who will go with you to the po after party. Then you can fly me, Mr. Politician. I will fly over there. I'll make sure I've got my wardrobe right, my makeup will be right, and I'll be your little, honey bunny for the weekend. And you can smash as often as you smash, as long as you make sure that I have my 100,000 rand in the bank before the weekend or by the end of the weekend. And meanwhile, I don't declare this thing to the whole world. To the whole world, they just see me. Ooh, I'm an HBIC, a head bitch in charge. I got my bag. I'm in my yacht. I got my, ooh, I'm creating my opportunities, but you're not telling us who's Mr. Sponsor. You know, telling us what you know. So it's more that it's very it's actually it's like a paradox, you know, because here's a here's us, you know, championing women in this day and age being their bosses. I mean, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I'm not saying now we must look down on ourselves, but also we're still tapping to, you know, funny like stereotypes that we've been fighting against for so long, you know, being seen as sexual objects, being objectified and all of that. But now it's been sort of reappropriated or inverted that. But I'm the one who made the choice. I'm even making sure that, but I'm the one who made the, it's transactional. I get something in return. And it's so confusing. It's a paradox, you know. And you know, at the end of the day, it's supposed to be empowering, but I wonder if it is. I'll put it as a
Talking about.
question. I don't want to be, I don't want to be beaten up somewhere, Wesley. So rather, let me just put it out as a question. Maybe your next guest will. That is it really that empowering? So now I feel that it's an injustice to the rest of,
I
you know,
agree.
us females who are not for, you know, we are so happy not bleaching our skin. We're happy to be nice and chocolate, and we're not looking to, you know, for any blesser or, you know, to be part of, to be on the database of ladies at the gentleman club books. We're not looking to be part of that. But then when you're in the workspace, men have come to believe they can buy love, they can buy, you know, companionship, they can buy us, you know, because this culture has become so rampant, such that when you're like, no, I don't wanna, and now they're confused and they're even angry and they're even, you know, slighted. Then who are you? What's for? You're not even the hottest girl out here, and you're busy here, turning me down. Do you know that a nice little yellow bone, you know, I went somewhere the night, who are you know? And the next thing now there's tension. Why? Because you sort of tried in your best respectful way to show this Mr. Man, whoever he is, up in the hierarchy in the workspace, that I'm not one of those. You know what I mean? So I'm not one to say that. I don't want to look down on anyone out there, because I know some of these ladies have used that to really empower themselves, you know, after like a nice 3-year slave
Let's look at
existence,
the
they leave. But
word
it's
like empower. Sorry, finish up. Sorry, finish up.
now I'm saying that there are some girls who have really, and by the way, I'm not advocating for it, Wes, but there are some girls who've taken this slave queen stint to get themselves a nice bag, and then they dip to go do something worthwhile. You know what I mean? But I'm not advocating for it. Neither am I advocating for porn, because porn has also become an industry that ladies have entered into to, you know, to help their families and whatnot. So I don't want to sort of speak down on anybody. I don't know. We all have different stories, but I will never reach a place where I will say that this is a viable route to live, you know, a
There's
viable
this.
route to take to success.
I get what you're
It's
saying.
an injustice. It actually, hey.
I get your point. I wanna raise a point there. It's funny that when we want to talk about slave queens and so forth, the word empowerment comes forth. Like, women are empowering each other. I'm doing this to empower myself. Don't you think there's a bit of a problem just with the grammar, just with the language? I mean, is that a sense of empowerment?
Yeah.
I don't really think so. I think, you know, as a guy, I love African women. I love everything about a woman, from the hair, everything, right down to everything.
Really?
There's I think
Allah,
I think I
Allah
think I
way.
think I think there's women are designed to be beautiful. There's nothing unattractive, I would say. So I find it always weird that you know, in contemporary society we always use empowerment. Sure. Capitalism disenfranchising, disempowers minorities, women, and so forth. There the argument is completely invalid. So I would use empowerment there to. If some sister is, you know, studying further, I don't know, working for, you know, but to, you know, to
Yeah.
makeup and hair, I don't really think that's empowerment. I wanna add another thing here into
Yeah.
pop culture. If you look at And I touched on this thing some time ago. If and I want to get a just this is a very quick example. If I look at women or female MCs, I want to use like Queen Latifah, for example. Like I'm a big Queen Latifah, always have been. If you look in the early 90s, she was, I mean, she's like lesbian or something, and she was always a bit butch and stuff, and like she never really flaunted her sexuality, but there was something sensual about her. They actually quite a bit, especially in the early 90s.
About Queen Latifah.
Yeah, especially when she went to the more jazz route, the more vocal. There's
Okay.
something very, very sensual about the body and the way she moves and stuff like that. But it's not necessarily a sensual or sexual image that she was projecting. You flip, if you look at an artist like Sexy Red or many of these African sisters, they and Slay Queens
Sexy red.
is the same thing. It's the same thing, and I don't necessarily think that's woman empowerment. What's your take on that?
Well, about I love Queen Latifah. I just found out what gets worse. Candle corner. I think I know your time. But you know what, the fact is, let's be honest, beauty standards evolve and change from season to season, from decade to decade. And I don't know when we got to the BBL beauty trend, the yellow bone beauty trend. And I think also American culture, because is it American culture? I don't know, but I don't know which point in our evolution the weave became the marker of success and good grooming for a woman, right? The weave and an afro, or you know, it's like I know when I go to town in Pretoria, especially when I w walk along Church Street, it's now called, I think it's called Lilian Ngoyi. My Congolese aunties, Nigerian aunties, they'll be like, "My friend, Tom, come let me do your hair." And when I say to them, "I'm okay," they'll be like, it's not fine. It's not fine." You know? So for them it's like, I didn't finish the grooming process. You know, when you get ready to go out of the house as a lady, you make sure you have your deo you bought, you got your moisturizer, deodorant. You know, it's almost like if I leave my hair here, I never got to finish my hair. Something is wrong. I'm not perfect to go out into the world, you know. So that's the beauty standard now. A weave is the highest standard of perfect grooming. And also two other beauty standards that have sort of really taken over, which also, you know, brought the bleaching, now problems of, you know, bleaching, is the yellow bone. That's a South African term. Yes, the yellow bone beauty trend. This is the highest ideal of beauty where we are now. I don't think it was like that in the 90s. In the 90s, there were many chocolate queens, the Lauryn Hills. But now, where we are, yellow bone is the epitome or the standard of beauty. I'm not saying it's my standard. I'm just talking about mainstream, like the narrative, the discourse out there. And of course, BBL. BBL also means a snatch waist. You know what I mean? Because you can't be BBLing there and also BBLing in the waist. So it's like the waist must be snatched, you know? And then you know what I mean? That's bad, but it's not the size 8 of the 90, because the 90 was like a size 8 or Coca-Cola bottle. No, now it must be very extreme. The waist must be extra snatched, and the bum must be. So now it's like a pair, like a real. And these seem like, because you're a man, so for you it's like Alrado, but there are ladies who cry. I'm kidding you not, Wesley. There are girls who cry, who are obsessing. What can I do? I've gymed, but I'm not getting there. Or I would like to lose weight, but I eat too much. What? Some ladies are even looking for a man to be with, just who will fund them for that surgery. It's deep. Not for all women. I'm not saying not for all women, but there is a good cluster of women now because of the pressure. You know, the thing with us ladies is, all of us want to be seen as beautiful Fine, my definition of beauty may be different from the next lady. But most ladies, obviously we can't, speak, always generalize, but I would imagine most ladies want to be seen as attractive. You know what I mean? So for younger ladies who are still gullible, growing up in the world and the pressure, social media also is bringing another dynamic, especially for Gen Zs who are growing up. My niece is always on TikTok. I mean, the one time she had a nervous breakdown and we said, "What is your problem?" And she said, "I so want to be hot." We're like, "Girl, you are so cute. What's your problem?" And she was breaking down. She felt that, "No, but I'm not pretty enough." Why? Because she's just looking at all these people she's following, not bearing in mind that there's filters and things in play. They're obsessed about it. Some of them get even mental health issues of it, So the beauty standards we have now, together with social media, and we live our lives mostly virtually, looking at other people, comparing our lives to them, and it's also just bringing a very superficial way of looking at things and looking at ourselves. And I'm talking here very biased because I'm talking mostly about ladies, and the pressures that we have in the world currently, and due to beauty standards, the social media publishes and publishes and publishes and publishes. Then all the artists that we love, the Nicki Minajs, and she'll be there, and she'll be in the music videos, and she'll be like, and I was like, you know what I'm saying? And also because we follow people that we really like, we like to think that we know them. We don't, of course, but maybe because of the music and that. And however way they look or whatever they are promoting in their lyrics or bars. And Nicki Minaj, for example, she promotes the Barbie, she's a black, she's a Barbie, she's a Barbie, then they twerk on us to remind us that, hey, mine, I've got something back there. Hope you have your own, but mine, I've got the booty, and I'm a 10. That's a new term out there. I'm a 10. She's a 4. I'm a 10. Ice Spice likes saying it a lot, that she's a 10. She's a baddie, I'm a baddie, I'm a 10. And then at the end of the day, a young girl would look at herself and be like, what am I? Am I a 2, a 3, a 5, a 10? And she is now going through the checklist based on what society doesn't publish this explicitly, by the way. It's very subliminal. It's in the pictures, the images, the Instagram models, in the music especially. But I do agree with you that ultimately all this is not empowering, not at all.
I think it's quite the opposite. And like you're saying, the mental health and the expectations that these kids have, I think I think that's evil to be quite honest.
And it goes back to capitalism ways, because at the end of the day, who are behind these? Who are the record label execs? Most of the time, not always, it's white men. Yes, they may have their token Jay-Z to front as the next, the other boss, but some of the
I
time.
find it so weird that like women rights has come such a long way since, let's take the 1980s, which is 40 years ago, but it's going back further back. I think quicker. Like I've actually spoken about this topic quite a few, especially with the African Genius podcast. If any of the listeners can check out, there's a few episodes. I think we did about two on this, on the beauty standards of African women. Whereas as well, where my co-host, is also a guy who just trying to talk to women and see what their perspective are, and the politics of here, like what you said was so poignant. Like you walking down Church Street and there's people saying, hey, let me
You're
come,
not
let me see
fast,
your hair. Like yes, sis, man, that is so deep. That is so deep. Like I wanna sort of wrap up yeah, but I wanna ask you or get your opinion. Like Lerato, we're both creative people and we both identified that as artists our sort of position in society, and we've all made a decision to follow this route as opposed to the other. As a writer, as a journalist, as a creative person, I guess I mean I'm not asking for your solution. I mean, that's split naive. Nobody has a solution. But what's your sort of, I mean, like with your, you know, with your tools, with your credit tools, are you trying to, you know, speak to this to example, like you're talking about the thing about slave queens. I feel women's voices, and this is my last point, and you can call me out to this, but I have noticed women's voices are becoming shit, man, what's that? I don't want to get too there's this whole stereotype of a black woman being loud and woo, being loud and you know, being all of those, like I find there's a sort of like categorizing women mostly in that group where they're all loud and boisterous and whatever they're talking about is, but you sort of get what I'm saying. I'm trying not to use certain.
I do get what you're saying.
Because I don't want somebody to come and bite my ass in a few months, because they will do that to me. I am a dude, unfortunately. Like you're saying, women are being disenfranchised in that way. Men's voices are being silenced, especially black men. They will take away your platform, they'll take away your money, they'll take away your contacts, just like that, because somebody decided that you said something some time ago. Like, as men, we need to be really careful about that, and especially if you're a minority like myself. So, where's your, or rather, how are you sort of using your creative voice in that, you know, in what you're writing out? Because I think you are a great writer, so, and I think you are a very good poet as well.
Thank you.
So, yeah, man, and I'm saying that because I really feel that, like me, I love poetry. I think it's you know, like if you got a headache, you take a tablet to take the headache away. I think
both. I'm a poet, but I hate poetry.
Yeah, I'm building this whole thing up, and I'm building this thing up. But yeah, give me your views on that.
I think now I'm gonna become very personal. For me, to be honest with you, I've just been trying to figure out, like, who's Lerato in the world. That's what I want to be frank with you. That's really what I've been going through. I would say the past 8 years, 9 years or so, just like having to deal with my own inner, you know, demons and stuff. And I think it happened when I fell pregnant. Because before then, really, our life was like, oh, man, let's turn up, let's love. And I was radical about everything. And I really had no time to listen to nobody. I was the voice of reason. And I was young, black, and, you know, proud and talented. And like I said, having grown up, you know, being a born free and having been told that the world is your oyster, I was living there, you know. So I really was. And then when I fell pregnant, there were many things personally and intrapersonally that sort of made me quiet down. And it so happened that I was very isolated. People that I sort of called friends, they kind of disappeared. And I came to Pretoria because I was in Cape Town. I came back home in Pretoria. I think God, the universe, however you look at it, had sort of, you know, colluded to say that Lerato might just be still. Because I was all over, you know, street culture, street photography. I mean, especially as creators, right? We just want to try everything, do everything. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I think there's power in coming to a place where you really find peace and really get to know yourself more. And I was somebody, I had a lot of identity issues and things that I really had to deal with. And that's what even brought me to... being reconciled with my paternal side and getting more closer with them, because I was basically raised by my maternal side. And I would say that it's only now that I'm sort of emerging out of that. I don't know what to call it, but it's like I went through a pilgrimage of sorts. It was mostly internally, you know, and I lived a very reclusive life. And poetry, my creativity is what kept the joy, kept Lerato, reminding me who I am, you know, writing my little songs and discovering my creativity. It's like I went back to when I found out that I was creative. Back, for most of us, it happens in secondary school, right? And then when we get to undergrad university, we go all wild. And the thing with being a creative is your whatever your talent is, whatever your creativity is, you do it for enjoyment, you do it for entertainment. I would think most people do it for that. But there's such power in being an artist that sometimes this art comes back and speaks back to you and starts to heal you and starts to unravel things in you. It was you're never meant, you're not looking for to be deep, you're just creating. But when you get deep into the creativity, you start asking questions, many things unravel. So that was my journey. I was unraveling. It's only now that I'm really now knowing who I am as Lerato. I know my identity, my background. I'm coming out and I see how it influences how I use my art. Because before it was for vanity's sake. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with vanity. We all got a
Nothing.
vanity has got its healthy doses. In
Yeah.
fact, if you're a
Everything
rapper
in
and you don't
moderation.
have if you're a rapper, you don't have some vanity, probably your bars are whack. I mean, we all have vanity, you know, but
Agree.
what I'm saying is
I agree.
I was living only for that, you know. I was living only for that. But now I'm more intentional with what I write about. I don't know what it is. For a long time I was more and something that I had to ask myself, why is it that I always am kinder to dudes than to ladies? I was kinder to dudes, I hang out with dudes, you know? I hang out with dudes and I really didn't feel that I want to champion anything that has got to do with females. It's just people out there who would call me a feminist because you know how they like labeling us artists and stuff and you know they'll give us these titles and tags. But to be honest with you, as I never called myself a feminist and neither am I saying that I'm not a feminist. I'm just Lerato. Usually what I write comes out of testimony, what I've gone through, what I've been through. And also what I see, because I'm somebody I think I've got, you know, I spend my life usually looking at the world, looking at what people are doing, pondering on it, and it will manifest in a song or it will manifest in some very conscious writer and creative, you know. That's why, because I'm tapping into music, that's why it was always hard for me to try to go mainstream. Because whatever I do, I always feel like I must teach something or talk something or enlighten something. So it's not easy for me just to entertain. But now I feel like I'm more authentic because now I know myself more and I know myself deeper. I do feel that I can do something more to you know to empower or I don't know when it comes to writing about women or for women. I've always had a passion for, you know, the stage of adolescence, which is usually age 13, young woman, like from girlhood to womanhood. For me, that's the most tense, the most complicated part of my life. So I'm very passionate about that journey from girlhood to young womanhood. I do have some poems that touch on that. Do have some pieces of prose that touch on that. But now that I'm a woman, I'm in the flower of my womanhood. I don't write as much about it. But yeah, I don't know. I think now it's more about, look at me, I'm my own woman.
Well, on that, Lunata, thanks for
I'm
that.
just enjoying my own femininity right now.
If any of my listeners wanna read some of your work, where can they get hold of that? So, social media handles and so forth.
If you really want to read some of my work, my Facebook, not only do I post some of my poems, but whatever my moves are, even if there's a link, for example, to my YouTube channel, I'll probably put it on my Facebook timeline. So my Facebook, I don't use it really to socialize. For me, it's like a networking. it's like an announcement page for me,
Yeah,
kind
man.
of.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, my timeline. So this way, you follow my Facebook, you will always know what I'm up to. And if I have other social media handles, you'll find them on my Facebook as well.
Yeah, for sure. And to the listeners, yeah, check out Lerato's YouTube channel. There's a lot of good stuff there. I will paste all those links on the bio, the write-up on this episode.
Cool.
Lerato, thanks a lot, man, for sharing your I think we covered some really interesting stuff here. Everything from exclusive books to identity politics to woman empowerment. People, a lot of cool things. Thanks so much, man. It's like
Thank you too.
I reckon it's like 45 degrees inside here now. I'm
I love you, the background. I love all the pictures. It looks like a one extended mural. It is so dope. I'm not
Thank
seeing
you.
any doves. Funny enough, I'm not
Of
seeing
course
even
they are.
one dove.
I will show you they, but
Oh,
they, you
yeah.
know, but they tiny. So these are just doodles. I haven't been making a lot of art actually for the whole of last year, and there's another reason behind that. So I've just been doodling and doing small and little concepts and ideas, and I'm working towards something. And
You've just been cooking. You're not ready to dish out. You're just cooking,
yeah,
cooking.
that's a good way, a good way of putting it. I've got a plan leading forward, and that's also I want to talk to you, see where you are.
But the one that surprised me was I didn't know that you have playwright as one of your interests. That's why earlier on I was like,
I actually spread myself pretty thin at one point, where I just know so many dope ass people doing so many dope ass things that at one stage I just involved myself in everywhere, and I think I spread myself a bit too thin. I very much a tunnel vision since COVID, and I've changed a few things personally. I mean, my life has changed dramatically since COVID, actually. But I've just tunnel vision a few, which is why I'm running out of time here. Which is why I want to talk to people like yourself and others who sort of works in multiple mediums and uses their voice and has a voice in multiple. So there's method to my madness here. I am working on a sort of plan, and you will hear from me again. Unfortunately, the one thing I'm doing is taking way too long. But I'm meeting these cats on Wednesday, actually. Fucking hell. But I don't even want to mention it on this platform. I just think it's taking too long. But you will definitely hear from me in the course of the year. There's a there's a there's a there's a vision, let me put it to you. And yeah, that play, I will actually, shit, man, that was, oh, I just remember now, it was quite a thing, and we were looking to do it. But anyway, my sister, it's gonna unlock something that I would rather want to keep quiet for now. But you will hear from me, Lerato. Thank
Okay,
you
next
very much
time,
for coming to my sister. I enjoyed the energy, I enjoyed the love, I enjoyed everything. It was really lovely. I will publish this episode this week. I was probably working on it today. I see I still have power, so I'm gonna work on the episode right now, actually, because I don't
Cool.
know when they might take our power away. You have a smashing day, man. And to my listeners, remember, guys, if you like this
Thank you so
channel,
much.
smash the like and subscribe button. I would appreciate it a lot. Leratu Waha Masumela, my sister, have an awesome week. Much love, and you will hear from me in the course of the week.
One left.
One love, my sister.
Bye.